Take your Bibles tonight and turn it to Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Ecclesiastes chapter 4. You know, I don't believe in serendipity. I don't know if you know what that is. It just means something that happens good, kind of out of what the world would call luck or chance. I believe in divine providence, and I think it's interesting that while I didn't plan it this way, I get an opportunity to speak on marriage, on living for Christ within the home, really the Wednesday right before we have our marriage enrichment seminar. And we're going to be looking, starting in verse 9 tonight. It says, two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him that is alone. When he is alone, when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. Hopefully we'll get a little further than that. I just want to set the tone. Now, I don't believe this is speaking only to marriage, but I think when you talk about two that are walking together, you should be talking about married people. A married couple ought to be walking together. You ought to have people that are not just living under the same roof. And in a sense, I think God can say that the marriage is honorable and all. Is that right? Absolutely. And so in verse 9, it talks about two are better than one because they have a good reward. That word better and good are the same word. And it carries this idea that it's better not to be alone. That's what the Lord said when he created woman, right? It's not good for man to be alone. And so as we think about marriage, as we think about God's institution, long before government, long before the institution of government, God gave the institution of marriage. And I'm thankful for marriage. We talk all the time, if we are going to have a solid and a strong church, we must have strong families. But where do strong families come from? They come from a strong marriage. So two are better than one. I'm not going to get too deep into it, but I think it needs to be said from behind the pulpit that God created the husband and the wife. There's no room, when you read the Bible, to see any place for homosexual unions or for some of the nonsense that's going on. I don't call them marriages. Marriage, by definition, is between a man and a woman. And so when we look at God's design, by the way, that is a biological man and a biological woman. And I fear that we have to make these distinctions nowadays, but that is God's design. That is God's plan. And all things that God has designed are good. And two are better, that is desirable, is pleasant than one. I know some young people that are looking to get married one day. Now, I'm just going to park on this just for a second. And there's a great desire, and that's really what it's saying. Two are better. It is desirable. It is pleasant to have more than just yourself. And it's true. But we start thinking and start panicking. I'm talking to young people primarily that are in school. They're a freshman. I say, freshman, don't even get your nose out of the book. Don't even look around and see what's out there, all right? Sophomore, you're allowed to peek, but get your nose right back in the book. And then become a junior, and you start meeting people, and you're talking, and then become a senior, and you think, I'm in panic mode now because I don't have a ring. I don't have somebody. And we have this misconception that we have to become, or excuse me, that we have to find the right person. And so if there's 8 billion people in the world, my chances are 1 in 4 billion to get the right person. Now, I don't know about you. I don't gamble, but if I did, I wouldn't play those odds, okay? That's horrible. We hear this verse, it says, he that findeth a wife findeth a good thing. And so we get the same mentality that Hollywood has. The Hollywood mentality is you have to find the right one. You've got to find the right one. And all the movies are about finding the right one. And what happens? You go, start going down the road of life together, and you have an argument, and things don't work out the way that you thought they were going to. And suddenly, this isn't the right one. So what has to happen? Cut your losses and go find the right one. No. The main tenor in God's word is not about finding the right one. It's about being the right one. Being what God has called you to be. Putting yourself in a place. And the idea of this finding a good thing means crossing paths. Like you're going to stumble into it. And as you mature, as you grow, as you become who God wants you to be, God is working on that young lady or that young man that is going to come along your path. And in God's perfect timing, when you are at a spiritually mature place, I'm not saying that complete maturity, I'm just saying at a place where you can handle a relationship and that person is ready to lead you or to follow you, God is going to cross your paths. Don't short-circuit God's plan. Two are better than one. And look forward to marriage, but don't rush into it, short-circuiting God's plan. Let God develop what He is doing in your life. He says they have a good or a pleasant reward. Now, I want to sit on this for, we may not get very far, because I want to talk about what a reward is. I mean, a reward is some tangible evidence, what would be considered wages for your work. You like to get paid at the end of the week? You say, well, at the end of 2 weeks, maybe? I'm just saying we want something tangible that we can see for our labor. And God says, I believe in, especially when you talk about a good marriage, there are some benefits. And I want to talk to you tonight just for a little bit about what some of those benefits might be. What is a good reward? What is a tangible benefit to being married? Brother Bill? Strengthen one another spiritually. Absolutely. So you can encourage each other. We'll get that to that in just a little bit. When somebody stumbles, you pick them back up, right? Absolutely. Anybody else think of double your productivity? What we would call the division of labor, right? And so God's given design for the wife and for the husband and the roles that He has given. And when we are fulfilling God's design in the home, I'll tell you, it's like an 8-cylinder engine that is just humming along. But when we get that out of whack, it just feels a lot like a misfiring engine. You say, something's not there. There's no power there. But absolutely, you're able to accomplish more. So that's good. Anybody else? I thought I saw Brother John. Companionship, fellowship, absolutely. Nobody, even hermits, get lonely, okay? But we have been made to be social creatures. God has made us that way. And there should be no better friend in the world that you have than your spouse. You can have high school friends, and you can have people that maybe you had great camaraderie with, but you should not have a better friend in the world than the one that God has given to you to marry. And so absolutely, fellowship is, I believe, one of the key components that God has given. And that fellowship is what lends itself to encouragement. And when we're working together, there is that productivity. Annalisa? Absolutely. It is certainly a picture of Christ in the church. And so it is really a witness to the world. Our marriages are a testimony and really a witnessing tool to the rest of the world. I saw a hand over. Yes, sir. What's that? Yeah, absolutely, right? Be fruitful and multiply. God has given the gift of that physical relationship, okay? Let's just stop and remember that is God's gift. That is holy. That is pure. The world has tarnished it. The world has made it dirty. But that is a wonderful gift that God has given to mankind to be fulfilled in the confines of marriage. I don't think a pastor can ever say that too often from behind the pulpit in a world today that just mocks the idea of saving yourself for your spouse. And study after study after study has shown that those that wait and keep themselves for marriage will have a more fulfilling and more happy marriage, even in that physical realm, okay? And so we don't need studies to tell us that, because God has told us that, but I always love when the world has to acknowledge what God has said is true. So absolutely. Any other tangible or things that you can see? We've heard spiritual, we've heard some physical things, we've heard about the family. Brother Glenn? He said that we complete each other. Absolutely. Absolutely. We are all blind to some areas of our lives. And you will be drastically different than your spouse. You may overlap in some areas, but primarily we do think about opposites attracting. I don't know if it was our pastor when we were younger, but he said you'll be different because if you're both the same, one of you would be unnecessary. Okay? And so God has made you different, separate, not better, not worse, just different. And so God gives you someone to help you identify those blind spots in your life, whether it's spiritually or emotionally, but they help to complete us. They make us whole. And what a wonderful, wonderful thing. Anybody else can think of anything? Brother Bill? Right? Right? That is part of it, but what are the benefits? What are the tangible rewards from marriage? We've listed several, but I think there's some more out there. Now, I want you thinking about it, because I don't want to just feed it to you tonight. I want you to think, how does God bless tangibly in the way of marriage? Oh, I told you, if it goes above your nose, go ahead, Andrew. So that completed that compliment, kind of that blind spot. Absolutely, absolutely. I wrote a couple down, and I looked a couple up just for statistical purposes, but I wanted to see if you could think of anything else. I find sometimes when we talk about it, you all come up with things I didn't even have on my list. And it's always incredible, the brainstorming that we can have. Can anybody else think of some benefits of marriage? Yes. Yes. Not only is it she may be better at some things than I am, or he may be more gifted in some areas, there is an emotional complement as well. And so to meet not just the physical needs, but the emotional and spiritual needs, marriage fulfills that in the life of the husband and the wife. That is what is amazing about God's design, is that when we are looking to be what God has designed us to be, God will bless us not only because we have obeyed Him, but we get the blessing of the fulfillment of that marriage as well. I want to remind you in Ephesians that we're never given our rights. Ladies, you don't have the right to be loved. Fellas, you don't have the right to be reverenced. We're given a responsibility. Gentlemen, we are given the responsibility to love our wives. Ladies, you are given the responsibility to honor your husband, to follow his leadership. And so God writes it in such a way that we never get to stand on our rights and say, I deserve this. No. He says, you don't deserve anything. You deserve to follow my plan. Well, he doesn't really say deserve, but he says you have a responsibility then to follow my plan. But here's the amazing thing. When a husband loves his wife the way that God has commanded in his word, it's not hard for her to reverence and to follow him. And when the woman is following her husband, guess what? It is a whole lot easier for him to love her the way Christ commanded. Now, If the husband's not loving the wife, that's no excuse for the wife not to follow. He's not loving me the way I'm supposed to, or that he's supposed to, so I don't have to follow him like I'm supposed to. No, because God has given you the responsibility, whether he's loving or not. And the same is true for the husband. If the wife is not following him, if she's not reverencing him, as the Bible has said, he doesn't say, well, I don't have to love her. She's not doing her part. No, because God has given us as husbands the responsibility to do right. We don't get to claim our rights. We have to fulfill our responsibility. But in that, as I said, there's a double blessing. The blessing of obedience always comes knowing that we are fulfilling our Father's will. That should be a blessing. And then the second blessing is that love is reflected in our wives. That reverence then is reflected back to the wives from the husband. Okay? So those are all very good. I want you to think about, in the context, I believe Brother Larry is talking about having children. And I want you to know there is an epidemic in our country right now of fatherless homes. Part of it is just the lack of morality that we have in our culture today. Part of it is a government that for years has paid women more money when fathers are not involved. And so there's been economic pressure that has been put on. And so all I'm saying is we need to have more two-parent involved children living in a home that their biological parents are living in together. I have several statistics, but I'm going to share several of them. I'm not share all of them. Most of them are about fatherless homes because that is what we see primarily in our culture today. But I think it starts so very early. It's not when they turn 8 or 10 or 15 that they need that fatherly influence. I was reading today that fathers and infants can be equally as attached as mothers and infants. When both parents are involved with the child, infants are attached to both parents from the beginning of life. Fathers are important from the very beginning. Children where fathers are in the home are related to positive outcomes in infants, such as improved weight gain in preterm infants and improved breastfeeding rates. I'm just saying that is so shocking to me. You would think that how can a father, but the security that child has, even as an infant, the safety, when it doesn't know anything except that there's two people that love them, are going to thrive more, even at an infant stage. That's astounding, but that's God's design. Children who feel a closeness to their father are 75% less likely to have a teen birth, 80% less likely to spend time in jail. Do you hear that? 80% less likely to go to jail if a father and a mother are living together, raising their children as God has prescribed. You say, well, children are resilient. I heard once, well, we shouldn't stay together just for the children. Yes, you should. What about the argument? Well, it'd be better for y'all not to talk to each other and raise them. No, I'm just kidding, okay? But it'd be better for two parents to learn how to get along and raise a child than to just split their weekends up and destroy their lives. I don't think we realize we have listened to the secular culture of our day about the resiliency of children and how it doesn't really affect them, and more and more and more studies are coming to the surface that say that is destroying young people, because divorce wrecks a lot more than just the husband and wife relationship. They're half as likely to experience multiple depression syndromes. Father engagement reduces, I forgot what website I got this from, but it reduces problems and rates of depression in young women. Let me just give you five more. I mentioned this already. This one said 85% of youths in prison come from fatherless homes. 71% of high school dropouts come from fatherless homes. 90% of all homeless and runaway children are from fatherless homes. Did you catch that? 90%. I know when I start hearing numbers, sometimes my eyes start to glaze over and it just sounds like a bunch of numbers, but I want you to really wrap your mind about that. 90% of runaway children are because they did not have a mother and their father in the home that was working together to raise that child. I believe this is in America. Nearly 25 million children live without their biological father. And 60%, more than half, of youth suicides are from fatherless homes. In 1960, 92% of homes were headed by two-parent families. Today, that percentage is higher than I thought, but it's still only 68%. A 30% drop. Listen, there is certainly a lot of harm when there's not a mother in the home. And I'm not at all diminishing the importance of a loving, nurturing mother. That is so needed. But I will tell you, the biggest epidemic that we face in America today is the absentee father. So when we talk about a good reward, I want to tell you there are tangible things, literal things, statistically, you can say are better simply because a husband and a wife are following God's design for the family. Don't lose sight of that. It's not just your life you're crashing upon the rocks when you break up a marriage. Don't believe the lie that children are resilient and they'll get over it. They'll be fine. You have no idea the damage that you're doing. It's better to learn to work it out with your spouse than it is to just call it quits. There's a lot more at stake than you might realize. Two are better than one because they have a good reward. You know, I believe no one goes to the altar thinking that they're going to get a divorce. When I think about this phraseology, it says, for their labor. Now, that word labor carries the idea of a dark side of the work, the grievous drudgery of it. We don't talk about the nobility of work. I'm just talking about just the day-to-day grind. That's the idea of this. It's just the humdrum of life, just real work. And sometimes that's what marriage is. It says their labor. Before I got married, I heard that marriage was a 50-50 proposition. That's bad, bad, horrible advice. No, marriage is 100% and 100% proposition. And you'd better put your all into the relationship that God has given to you. It's 100%, 100%. It's work. But it brings a reward. It's a blessing. So God gives us this comparison. Two are better. And He gives us a reason. You could ask the question, why are two better than one? Well, He says, number one, there's a good reward. And then secondly, He says, you have someone to help care for you. So He gives the comparison and He says, listen, there's a somebody that will help care for you. If you fall, this is not just a trip. This carries the idea of falling in battle, as though you are waging war and somebody has taken you out and you're laying on the ground. The one will lift up his fellow. That will lift or lift up carries the idea of to cause to wake up or to help back to the standing position. We talked a little bit about blind spots, about things that you may not realize. And God has given a husband and a wife that they can grow spiritually together. And there will be things that he is weak in, that she will be strong in. There will be things that she might be weak in or is weak in, and he will come alongside. And not only is it two better because there is a good reward, but there is help and companionship. Now listen, young person, don't make this your life verse, okay? Woe to him that is alone. It refers to someone who has no companions, someone that is an island unto themselves. You know, this happens a lot of different ways. I'm listening to an audiobook right now. It's interesting. And talking about trust and things and when people break trust and how to rebuild that. But it is interesting. He relates a story. It's Henry Cloud, and the name of the book is Trust. But he tells a story about a fellow that had a hard time committing. And he dated this woman for I don't know how long. And finally, he proposed to her. And he never called her again. His friends had to come back and say that he just couldn't commit. He couldn't trust. That's horrible. But that man is going to spend his life alone. Woe to him. That's a powerful word. It's not just kind of, well, that's horrible. You say, well, I want to get married. Well, then work on your relationship with Christ. Abide in him. Let him develop you. Let him bring you to the place where you're ready. But, you know, I fear that there are times when people, after they're married, you see, they start out encouraging, walking together. But whatever happens in life, they start to grow apart. Sometimes it's children, and children become the center of the marriage, and it's kid-centric instead of Christ-centric, and all the lives are revolving around what happens with the children, and the mother devotes her love and attention to the children. The father goes out, and he says, well, I've got to make money. We've got to do this, and his devotion is somewhere else, and no longer is there work or labor to work together. It is just two people eventually living in the house. They're strangers wearing rings that are living under the same roof. That's a tragedy. You can't let that happen. And the way you don't let that happen is you work. You put in the time and the effort to develop that relationship with each other. Woe unto him that is alone. Ask somebody who wakes up after 20 years of marriage. I had a family member that was married for 20 years. And his wife divorced him and chased after somebody. This is when Facebook first came out. Or maybe it was MySpace. I don't know what it was, but some social media. The kids have grown up, and now there's two strangers. You're looking for something else. Make sure that you make your spouse your best friend. The idea of lifting up to a standing position kind of carries the idea of edifying somebody, building them up. I wonder, husbands, how well do you build up your wife? Do you encourage her? Do you praise her? Do you thank her for what she does? Or do we just take them for granted? Do we ask questions, like, that's all you got done today? I've never asked my wife that. She always gets more done than I could. But if we have a critical spirit, if we have the critical heart, and nothing's ever good enough, what we're doing is we are doing damage not just to our spouse, but to our relationship then. We're not lifting them up, we're breaking them down. Wife, are you critical towards the decisions that your husbands make? Is your favorite refrain in a relationship, see, I told you so. That's the most dangerous phrase that a wife can tell a husband. Maybe you don't say anything, but do you think that if you made the decisions, you wouldn't be in the situation that you're in right now? Maybe you have a low opinion of your husband. You wouldn't allow him to be the leader in your home. You just say, listen, I can't trust his leadership. I'm asking you to trust God. I'm asking you to trust the Lord and for you to live your life by the design that God has given and trust Him for the results That's a big ask. That's not a small thing. But if you believe God's going to bless, your faith is simply believing, just like Abraham, believing God, trusting Him. And God will count that for righteousness. I'm not talking about salvation, but I'm saying He'll bless that faith. Spouses ought to be building each other up. Maybe your husband comes home, ladies. He's depressed, downtrodden, depressed, dejected. That's not the time to break out the to-do list. He says, I know you feel defeated, but here's a list of things you haven't gotten done around here yet. When you have the opportunity, encourage him. Listen to him. Be his biggest cheerleader. Find things in him that are praiseworthy. Now, I'm not asking you to lie. I'm not asking you to invent something. What I am saying is God has given you that man. You have made that God's will for your life. As soon as you say, I do, that is God's will for the rest of your life to be married to that man. Fellas, for you to be married to that woman. And so find something that is praiseworthy and then tell him about it. Build him up. Husbands, when you get home and your wife looks frazzled and maybe the kids were an absolute nightmare, that day when every appliance in the house seems to back up, break, and malfunction, and she's trying to explain to you how difficult the day was, that's not the time to say, well, that's horrible, but when's dinner? You just dismiss everything she said. Don't try to solve every problem. Sometimes it's just good to stop and say, am I listening or am I fixing? I need to know. And if she says listening, just listen, okay? Be sympathetic. Be understanding. Encourage her. So we need to lift each other up. That's one of the blessings of marriages. You have somebody that when you stumble, they're there to lift you up, to help pick you up. You know, as your relationship with the Lord grows, your relationship with your wife will grow. And as you both depend upon the Lord more, it'll be easier to encourage one another. It says again, if two lie together, then they have heat. That's physical heat produced by the bodies. And once you're married, you're going to find out one of your spouse's toes are going to be cold, okay? But there's a body heat that comes together, and that is a blessing. And I think that is and can be also emotional heat. That idea of warm, how can be warm alone? How can one be warm alone? I think it can be extrapolated or stretched out to carry this idea of conception, all right? And so I'm just going to say, oftentimes, especially in the secular world, it should not be true of husbands and wives, but in the marriage relationship, husbands will use romance to try to get physical intimacy. So the flowers and the candies, yeah, I love my wife, but what am I going to get out of this? Women have more of a tendency to use intimacy to get the romance that they desired. Okay? And so what I'm saying is both of those are wrong. They're both manipulating, and so we don't do something in order to get something. We love and we give simply because that person is worthy of our love and our gifts. But again, when we follow God's design, there is the blessings of marriage. We kind of covered this already in verse 12, but if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him. That means to bring a halt or to put down. But I love the last part of verse 12. And a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Now, you have cords the same size, and you put two of them together, they can hold, withstand a certain amount of tension before that they'll break. When you add a third cord, you would think you would be able to get a third more of the weight. Let me give you actual numbers. So if two cords could hold 100 pounds, you would think that a third cord would add 33 pounds to it. So you could hold 133 pounds. But the truth of the matter is when you add a third cord, it adds 50% more strength. So with one added cord, you get 50 pounds. So it's like a third helper in the marriage. Now, who should that third be? It should be God. It should be the Lord. It should be the Holy Spirit. Absolutely. It's not quickly broken. And what it means is that the relationship should not be child-centric. It shouldn't be spousal-centric, meaning that your spouse, the universe runs around them. But it does mean that it should be what we call Christocentric or Christ-centered life. You want to have things in common with your spouse. You want to be able to talk about things. You want to develop a relationship. Let me tell you, when you're able to talk about spiritual things, when you're able to pray with your spouse, fellas, I'll just tell you, when you pray with your spouses, you are meeting an emotional and spiritual need that very few other things can or will. So while I don't think that verses 9 through 12 are speaking exclusively about marriage, it's really talking about friendship and companionship, okay? I believe the truths of marriage fit firmly within this context. Two are better than one. And there is a good reward for their labor. Because even as verse 10 says, for if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not easily broken. I'm thankful for the strong marriages that I see in this church. But I'll tell you, we can all use a reminder. We need to be laboring, working on our relationship with our spouse. Be willing to give 100%. And in those times when we are under spiritual attack, we'll have a spouse that will come alongside of us and help us and pray for us. And when two of us are praying, it's interesting. It says here, two shall withstand him. Jesus gives the promise where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of him. A husband and wife can really engage in spiritual warfare more effectively than a single person can. And that's not to belittle people that are called to singlehood, okay? But I'm saying that God has given spiritual warfare to help for husbands to help wives and wives to help their husbands. And when we include Christ and make him the center thread of our marriage, we won't be able to be so easily unwound. All right? And so it is.